All right, March 18th, 2025. I've been thinking a little bit about the past and the future and time and impermanence. So actually labeling the date and time is, I don't know, it's interesting as it is, just a construction. In any case, let's see, Tuesday, what else do I usually say? The date and time. Welcome. Yeah, I've been working on some writing, and so I was thinking, when I write something fairly long, I create a table of contents using, the word table of contents creating thing, and that helps me to see the structure of what I'm writing and then find so different places in it. So I was looking at that this morning, because I had realized I wanted to add another layer to my table of contents. So we begin with 20 minutes of meditation, which I will partially guide. And then there will be something else, which will involve words, I'm pretty sure. That's as far as I'm going to commit myself right now. Excuse me. Might need the morning cough drop. Right, the arrivals seem to have stopped, or at least slowed enough that we can begin our sitting. Okay, just settling back. Just establishing a supportive posture. It can be helpful when we begin to take some slower and longer breaths. These don't necessarily have to be significantly deeper, but just slowing the breath a bit and letting that slow length be a kind of relaxation trigger. And with the inclining towards relaxation and settling, letting the attention move through the body. Having a sense of releasing, softening. Anywhere there might be tension, or anywhere there's potential for settling feeling. The chest and belly, shoulders, even the face itself, the jaw, the eyes. And then bringing the breath to the foreground. We're not trying to exclude other areas of awareness, other sense experiences, but just letting the breath be the primary focus. And when we step into this process, there's a letting go of control. And sometimes that results in a pleasant state, a settling. But other times there's a sense of being swept away by your own thoughts and feelings. And almost as if you're helpless and you're just sitting here. All this is just happening to you or in you or through you. And so we might increase our effort to be concentrated or to settle, focusing more on the breath. That effort is no guarantee that we'll be able to break through or break out of this stream of thoughts and feelings that energy is moving through. Sometimes there's just a surrendering to how things are, sitting with this somewhat unpleasant state, the kind of wish for it to be nice, serene meditation. And instead, we're just inside a cauldron of energies and emotions, thoughts, past and future, fears. And if we can just hang on to a shred of the breath, just enough to see that there is another way of experiencing what's happening, rather than as some overwhelming reality, rather just passing states. Impermanent states that are conditioned by circumstances. And that indeed, the gentle effort to simply come back to the breath, to the body, to the present moment can gradually deflate these energies. We can't make that happen. We can't exactly control our experience. But with patience, trust, persistence, kindness, gentleness. We can influence the direction of these energies, whether they are moving towards increasing intensity or decreasing. Perhaps this whole characterization doesn't describe your experience at all. Wherever you are, whatever's going on internally, just recognize that it is in process. Whether pleasant, it will pass. Whether unpleasant, it will pass. Whether neutral, it will also pass. I was feeling kind of agitated as we started, and then I was kind of thinking about why that was, and that allowed me to put some thoughts together, which if I'm going to talk to you, should have something to say. I got a little triggered yesterday when an old friend who I was in a band with, 45, back in the late 70s, actually, so more than anyway, sent a recording of a demo tape, and he'd been talking about it, and he'd mentioned some songs, and I was like, I don't remember recording that song. And then I heard the recording, and it was like I was on some of the songs, but I wasn't on some of the others. I realized that after I left this band, I thought the band broke up, but apparently they got back together and did some things with another guitar player. And it kind of like rocked my world a little bit, ego-wise. But what it got me thinking about was how we construct reality in our minds, and that we kind of don't question like our realities a little bit, and we go through life just sort of functioning within this worldview, and then sometimes something happens that disturbs it or disrupts it. And that's kind of what happens when you get sober, is you suddenly see yourself and your behavior and your world in a completely different light. And I remember when I first started to be invited to speak at AA meetings, telling my story and realizing that I now had a completely different understanding of my childhood, my adolescence, and my adulthood. That it was like it was a whole other belief system. And in that case, that was a good thing to get that new version of it. And I do think that this is one of the big challenges of getting sober, of that transition, is facing this alternative reality of your story, of your past, and then taking it in and processing it to a point that you feel comfortable with it, that then you can become stabilized in that new reality, right? I mean, it reminds me, my wife had a friend who, when she was a teenager, found out that her father wasn't her father, and that happens, right? Maybe some of you have had experiences like that, like, oh, it was not, and so what does that do to us when we do that? And I think, this is kind of one of the things that keeps coming back these days, is like, that can happen on a, with LSD or a psychedelic trip too, that it kind of blows apart your view of reality. It then this points to something very, fundamental about Buddhist teachings, which is this very idea that we construct reality with our minds, and that being free is seeing through that construction, and that and then there are the three primary ways that the Buddha kind of says that we do this construction. We think see things as permanent, we see them as satisfactory, and we see them as self, right? The three characteristics. And that awakening is seeing the impermanent nature of things, the unsatisfactory nature of things, and the not-self nature of things, or empty nature of things, that there is no solid core to any conditioned reality, whether it's physical, mental, conceptual. And that, that understanding, that insight is very destabilizing, right? The five daily recollections, which I recite each morning at the end of my meditation, I recite them silently. I'm of the nature to age, to sicken, and to die. Okay, first of all, it's like, no, I don't want it, especially that last one, And then the fourth one is, there's different, I have two ways of saying it to myself. The first one I learned from Ayakema, it's, all that is mine, dear and delightful, will change and vanish. And the second one, which I don't know where I picked it up, is, I must be separated from everyone and everything I hold dear. So again, really looking at this, one could call it harsh reality, but it's just reality, that everything is going to change, that everything about me is going to change, and everything about my world is going to change. I'll come back to the fifth one, but the what also comes up as I reflect on this is that this is happening in our country right now, and this is one of the things that's very destabilizing for me, and I imagine for many, many, if not all of you, that we had this idea that there was this thing called the United States of America, that and that we didn't have to think about it, it's just this thing, and then now we're realizing it didn't exist, so it can be blown up by one person just going crazy. And again, this is very destabilizing. You really kind of like what is real, right? And of course, again, from a Buddhist viewpoint, that's what we're trying to understand, that these things aren't real, that countries are not real things, that they are constructions, and that whatever can be, constructed can be deconstructed. And when we can hold that, which, right, I can, if you, it's not obvious, I can't right now hold it. But if we can hold this with equanimity, with clarity, with wisdom, then there's a tremendous sense of freedom, because things can't get to us. We're not going to be disturbed when things get blown up or things get constructed. It's just, we understand that that's how it is, that the things are impermanent, things are constructed, conditioned. Joseph Goldstein has a one of, I think in his very first book, The Experience of Insight, he has this image of someone driving across a like desert, just a bleak landscape, and then they get to the border between two countries, and it's like, okay, there's nothing, there's no reality that separates these two countries except this construction of an idea that here in this particular place is the line, but it doesn't, it has no, essential truth to it. These are opportunities. I mean, I'll say for myself, these are all opportunities for letting go, which is what is demanded of us around all of this, letting go. I am of the nature to age, to sicken, and to die. I can get upset about that, or I can let go. When I die, I can fight it or I can let go. Either way, I'm going to die. The reality is going to be there. Question is, how do I respond to that? And so those four First four of the five daily recollections are clearly about impermanence and about the constructed nature of experience. The fourth one, though, in typical Buddhist fashion, I think has a balancing quality to it, which is, even though there's all this stuff, I am still responsible on some level. I am born of my karma, heir to my karma, related to my karma, supported by my karma, the owner of my karma. Whatever karma I do, whether good or evil, wise or unwise, wholesome or unwholesome, this I will inherit. So, you know, I can't just turn my back on the reality that I live in. I still have a responsibility, and there's a lot of stuff I don't have any control over, but then I do have control. And control is not the right word, but I prefer responsibility to live in as wise and wholesome a way as I can. And, you know, that's the typical kind of middle way, right? The balance between the challenges that the Dharma presents to us. And, you know, it's not unlike, you know, that I'm powerless over alcohol, but what am I supposed to do about that? It doesn't mean I need to go out and drink because I'm powerless. I'm still responsible for whether I pick up a drink or not. So letting go, you know, and seeing that that there's this very deep level, you know, that we're challenged to let go, to see reality, to see it, you know, unvarnished reality. And you know, there's some realities like we can't see, like you can't see that your father isn't your father until you see it, right? And so it's not even so much that I'm going to know everything, but rather what I know is that I don't know, right? So this is the wonderful Korean Zen master Sansonim, whose teaching was founded in don't know. And what a great, you know, mantra and gata, sort of guiding verse, guiding reflection of our minds, of our lives. I don't know. And there's a freedom that comes with that. And it goes against our impulse and our ordinary way of being. And it even goes against the construction of ego, because ego wants to know, and I want to be a wise person who knows things, and I want to be smart. And to say, I don't know. But when we reflect on it and actually reflect on our lives and the reality around us, it's very much that we don't know. You know, we have a version of reality that we have in our minds, and that comes through our senses, which are also conditioned, and that's how we operate. Which we have to have that. If we don't have that on a functional level, we can't survive. But like the wisdom of the Dharma is to have that, but to always know that that's a construction, and that nothing about it is permanent or absolute. I mean, I like to just reflect on my senses. That, you know, if I walk around and say, "What do I smell?" Am I saying that's what there is to smell? No, because if I have a dog, I know that that dog can smell many things I can't smell. You know, when it comes to sight, Is everything I can see all there is to see? No, because I know that there are other forms of light that the human eye doesn't perceive. So in the same way, my mind can only grasp the realities that it's able, the mind is considered a sense, right? So it, just like my eyes and my ears and my nose, it's limited in terms of what it can perceive. So don't know is like the greatest form of wisdom. You know, it's the biggest statement of like, what's true? I don't know. You know, I thought this band broke up. No, I didn't. You know, I thought you were my father. No, I wasn't. You know, I thought I was a normal drinker. No, I was an alcoholic. You know. So, but that's, of course, all of those are just constructions too, you know. What you are, whether you're an alcoholic, whatever. Anyway, as our world disintegrates around us, we breathe and let go. So anybody who is near enough to Lake County, I'll be up there on Saturday at Joni Lane's Center. Anybody feels like coming out and sitting, I'm thinking it's going to be more meditation than I usually do on a day long. I was thinking about, well, I'm teaching this weekend, you know, and I have some title to it. And I'm like, yeah, but I really think what we need to do right now is just meditate a lot. And I feel that about myself. I've been trying to practice more, and, you know, my usual way of breaking up my week and my days is to go out and play golf, and I'm not able to do that. So doing a little more sitting, doing more writing, we'll see. You know, if it gets to a point that it's feels like it's really going to happen, I'll let you know about it. The last project I started on last year, I wrote about 80 pages, and then I got stalled, and I thought it was going to be a book. And so I'm going to wait until I have an actual book before I talk about this one. But I am writing frantically and intensely because it's my escape. It's like, it's an escape isn't even the right word. It's my safe place, right? It's the place that feels safe and that feels good and satisfying and supportive. And because people are like, oh, how do you write so many books? Like, I'm sorry, that sounded really mean. No, but I'm not some, like, I don't know. You don't need to hear me, you know, processing this, but just to say that I do it for myself, you know, and I'm just lucky that it happens that, you know, other people seem to like reading some of it, and that's given me a job. So I didn't have to keep working as a technical writer, you know, or a failed musician. But so right now it's like, I haven't been this intensely. I don't know if I ever have, because normally I take days off, but I'm not taking days off. My wife yesterday was like, I really admire how you can concentrate on this. I was like, wow, thank you. Like, cause you know, I was like, yeah, I wrote 2,500 words. Say what? 20? That's like 10 pages, you know, like what the hell? Anyway, Who knows? It could be crap. So that's the other thing. But it doesn't matter. It's like, for me, I mean, yeah, I want it to be something worthwhile, but it's just getting me through these days. And so I guess I'll say to you guys before I open it up, I hope you have something to get you through these days, because these are some of the toughest days, in historically, certainly that we've ever had, certainly since the 1850s, 1860s. Okay, on that happy note, I'm gonna let it go. And I see, Monica, you found a PDF of Joseph Goldstein's book.
Yeah, it was
Deep.
under Buddhist publications. So I downloaded it to my computer because somebody was having trouble with the link, but and then I just attached it. So
Yeah, I'm just concerned that that may be a violation of a copyright, because it
I would
is.
hope not if it's there. Let me look again.
Well, I've seen my own books copyright violated some years ago. There's ways that people do that, and they just then they put them out, and I mean it, whatever. It's up to people whether they care about that or not. You might be more of a, rebel who feels that all art should be free. Just notice that artists generally don't feel that
Oh, I don't feel that way, but
way.
I hope. Well, anyway, sorry about that.
No,
Don't
I didn't.
share it
That's
to
not
nobody.
m
Yeah.
meant as a criticism. I'm just mentioning
No,
it as somebody who survives partially on royalties from my own copyrights. I try to be,
a good point, and you could I just try to not I'm trying not to share the links from Amazon right now. So.
Yeah, right. No, fair enough. Exactly. And unfortunately, I make a significant part of my income from Amazon. So
So everybody go to Amazon and
I'm
don't look at
conflicted.
anything else. Yeah.
I'm conflicted, believe me, anyway, Mike, you got your hand up virtually.
Yeah, I raised my hand. I thought I'd try and save Monica from
Shame and ill
are you
repute.
embarrassed? Yeah, I wouldn't worry about it, Monica.
Yeah.
Yeah, so congratulations that you're writing and that you're passionately writing. Feeling good about
Thank
it.
you.
That's
Thank you.
that's awesome. You know, I was at a talk a while ago about finding that passion in your life, something that you like to do, and how freeing that can be and how important it can be
Yeah.
in terms of finding that state of mind where you can get some peace, balance, help, kind of help inspire you, let you go, and how that's different from livelihood. And it's kind of become more apparent to me how, the things are different where, for me, livelihood is, working, writing software and working on technical things and leading projects and that's a lot different from some of the passion stuff I like to do. Like one of the things I like to do is an activity, which is a little different than writing or some people paint, but I like to ride bikes and work on bikes and stuff. And so that's something that helps me, find a little bit of peace and gets me out of myself. And I just find it kind of liberating and fun to do. So I just thought I would throw that out there and congratulate you that you're having fun writing.
Thanks, Mike. Yeah, it's a good, first of all, I appreciate you giving that example. Because I do think that too often we associate that kind of idea of like a place to get a hobby or an outlet as something that has to be artistic. And it's more about the mind state that we get into when we do the activity. And one of the characteristics of that mind state is concentration. Things that we and because concentrating is a very pleasant mind state. That's why people meditating crave concentration because it feels good when you get concentrated. But when I'm writing, I get concentrated. When I'm playing music, when I get concentrated. When you're fixing bikes, you're probably getting concentrated. And the, you know, to be able to do something that doesn't have a, so for me, you know, I'm fortunate that is my vocation, but it's also my passion. But there is a distinct difference. When I go out and play golf, there the difference is that there is no impact on my broader life. It's just this thing here now. And when it's over, it's completely over, except for what I carry in my mind. But it, whereas if I write something, then oh, then we're going to publish it, then people are going to read it, then I'm going to get praise, or I'm going to get blame, or I'm going to get money. And it's like there's all this right stuff that's associated with being productive and doing things in the world. So something, there's something about doing something that's not productive and yet enjoyable. I don't know. I'm just, I'm not, I haven't quite landed on what it is, but something there. Jeff.
No,
Oh, sorry, Mike, go ahead.
I was just going to say, yeah, I think an important part of it is you're doing it for yourself, and if you get paid, great, a book comes out of it. But like you're saying,
Yeah.
you wrote before, and you may never do anything with it, but you did it because you liked it, you're passionate about it.
Right. And I've
Something
written five novels that have never been published, so I loved doing it. Yeah. Yeah, the guy who wrote the this past Sunday's New York Times crossword puzzle has written 50 unpublished novels. So I don't, I feel much less of a novel failure. Jeff, hello. How's the hip?
What is hip?
Ooh.
Yeah,
Ooh.
right.
Well.
Little rough rants.
What is hip? Sorry.
What is hip today might become
That
passé.
was Tower of Power.
TOP, the sober horn section. Listen,
Yeah.
first, thanks for reminding all of us of the five daily recollections. They are posted above my desk, and I see them every morning when I sit down to do whatever it is I have to do. And I think probably memorizing them and repeating them to myself in as part of my devotion is an excellent idea. You did not go down through the number five. I am the owner of my actions. I am born of my actions. I am related to my actions. I am supported by my actions. The funny thing about all of that is that some, although we don't seem to have much control over or even much focus on the reality that we, that which we call reality, we do have the power to tell ourselves a story about it. And it can be a, oh God, it's the end of the world story, or it can be, oh God, the world's always been like this and never will change story, or it can be a story of, well, maybe it'll get better.
Yeah.
You choose your story. I have a Korean friend who, when we were talking about politics, he's native of Korea, and we were talking about politics, and he pointed out to me that on the Korean Peninsula, since the last time the Japanese conquered them, that all of the leaders of North and South Korea have all been members of the same family, and this goes hundreds of years long. And he says, "You guys just aren't used to it. You think there's some other way to do this." He says, "Hey, it's over and over again. And if you think this, if you focus on this period of time, in the history of the world, and think it's just terrible, it's getting worse all the time, I would invite you to do a little reading about, say, 10th century England.
Right.
You know what a gibbet is? We don't have those anymore. Anyway, the construction of reality. I have a creek in my backyard. And in my backyard, this creek will flood occasionally.
And when it has, I've owned this piece of property, lived on it most of that time for 40 years. And at least four times over the period of time I've lived there, the creek banks have been collapsed, and half of my yard has been flushed out to the bay by a flood. And so 25 years ago, I started piling up broken concrete and rock and making walls to corral the creek bank. And the first time I did it, the flood came and washed them away. And then I built another one, and the flood came and washed it away. This is where I find the thing about impermanence. It doesn't matter how hard you try to make it stay, it always goes away. By the way, the renunciation of golf is not necessarily a bad thing.
Well, we can debate that offline, but
Yeah, well, I'm glad you're writing too. You
and
know that
I have not renounced it. My knee has renounced it.
well, I've given up square dancing too, but I don't miss it much. Always a pleasure to be with you.
Thank you,
Thank
Jeff.
you.
Forrest, hello.
Hi, Kevin and everyone. Yeah, I appreciate the discussion of impermanence, our craving to control, letting go. That's what I kind of heard. It brought up a contempl I found myself contemplating a memory of an experience I had. It was a traumatic event about 9 years, I guess 9 years ago now. And I had a morning and a colleague that was heading out. And I had issued some warnings of my concerns for his safety and stuff. But I didn't have the authority to do much more than that. And I'll never know exactly what happened, but he ended up dying that day.
Wow.
He did not heed my warnings, and I ended up being the first responder. Then it was one of a series of events that brought me up to what I refer to my second bottom. The gift of all that was is the realization that a spiritual path for me required more than the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and led me to the Dharma in here, and made a great gift. And I can probably continue to always unpack that event. And it's been a great thing. Like, when I think about our current political situation or global situation and the chaos, I can do my part and speak up for my own truth, but ultimately I can't, it brings me back to just the beauty of the serenity prayer. Accept the thing I cannot change, the courage of things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. I especially have found a lot. I'm currently working the ACA steps and their version of the serenity. Accept the people I cannot change, the courage to change the one I can, and the wisdom to know that one. And that does bring me solace. And that event in my life was maybe that was a great event, was also being the first responder and the impermanence of life and losing someone like that. And it's tough. It's a really tough lesson I wouldn't wish on anybody, but it is giving me kind of peace in our cover situation where I just, have a, found I have a better ability to learn about it and just focus on my own truth. Anyhow, I thought I would share, and I appreciate you bringing that up today.
Thanks, Forrest. I mean, it just, what strikes me is spiritual growth is rarely triggered by pleasant experiences. Basically, it usually takes something difficult or painful to bring about change, and whether it's on the personal or the global level. So, thank you. Tenzin, hello. Nice to see you.
Wait,
There you
there we
go.
go. Yes, lower my hand. Yes, and thank you, and so good to be here, and so good to hear you. I'm very moved by what you shared today, the five recollections, but also the story about the band, and how impermanent these stories are. So I mentioned maybe a couple of weeks ago, I'm doing another pass through my ninth step, and a lot of it is things from it's relationships from early in my life for the most part. So one that I'm getting ready to do, I've talked to my sponsor and other fellows, and I've got kind of the little script worked out. But I did some research. Like it involved, I was in the creative arts when I was younger, and it involved three people in at a place that we worked. But when I did some research, about two of them have become like really well known in the, in their particular field. And it's like I was transfixed this morning. I've thought about my part, but it's really amazing that already there's room for the story to be a little bit different. I can't know how it affected either one of those people earlier, but it's just opening my mind to, well, I didn't know anything about these people that I had some effect on, and somehow it's just shifting the story in a way that I don't remember ever doing very much research about the people, if I didn't know them well when I was previously in ninth step. So anyway, it was just meaningful to hear what you had to share. And I'm just, it's a little bit interesting because it's using a creative part of my, let's say, imagination or intelligence, even though I can't know, I can only know what my part is and the simple piece that I'm going to say when and if I'm, able to be in touch with them in person. But that's all I wanted to share, that what you said really brought this up for me. Yeah.
Nice. Thank you. Thank you, Tenzin. That's lovely. We're in a little past the middle of March, and I don't know why I have to say that. I'm just appreciate that Monica fills in all this information. I don't know how many people get around to saying it. And thank you, Shauna, is it, I guess, who found that the version of experience of insight is actually there with permission of the author. So all my paranoia is gone. Thank you. There's, all this other stuff that you guys probably know. You can give Donna there. Also, I don't know if people are like looking at or using the Google list of people who attend this meeting gathering. But I do hope that if you want to make contact with someone or you want to connect with people, that you do that through there. I guess we're done with Spirit Rock for the month. I can't remember anything. Oh yeah, it was last Friday. I'm going to be in Little Rock for anybody who's out in the Midwest. But it's not quite the Midwest, I guess. I'm not sure that the Southwest, Arkansas. Anyway, I'll be there in a couple weeks. And then the Big Bear Retreat in Southern California at the end of May. So those are the bigger public events I'm doing. So in any case, I plan to be back here next Tuesday as well on Zoom. So thank you all for showing up and practicing together. Have a safe, sane day.
Thank you, Kevin.
Thank you,
Thanks,
Kevin.
Monica.
Thanks, Kevin. Take good care.
Yeah.
Thanks, Kevin. Catch you later.
Thanks.